This podcast is produced with support from Yakult.
There are trillions of microbes living on us and in us, a thriving ecosystem of bacteria, viruses, archaea, and fungi. Collectively, these microscopic organisms form the human microbiota, and it appears to play a key role in many aspects of our health. Researchers now have evidence that the microbiota aids our digestion and nutrition and shapes our immune system. But it's also been linked with certain inflammatory diseases, with cancer, and it may even play a role in brain development. But how did we get to this point?
This all began with the means to see microbes. It was the invention of the microscope. And the first data sets were on the shape of these cells and their movement.
This is David Relman, Professor of Medicine and of Microbiology and Immunology at Stanford University in the US.
The next major technological breakthrough was the advent of culture. And what culture allowed scientists and others to do was to create enough of this microscopic life to see it in its bulk form, but also to measure its bulk properties, meaning what are the biochemical reactions that it performs. And the third big breakthrough was the technology that allowed us to sequence the small molecules of life. And those molecules included DNA, but also eventually RNA. As these technologies became cheaper, easier, and more sensitive and accurate over the last 20 years, it became possible to sequence proteins and infer the structure of metabolites. Looking at these different kinds of molecules, we could say not just who these cells are and to whom they're related, but what they're doing, what they're making, what their functions might be. And so the net sum of all of these effector molecules that microbes are making and using to talk to each other became then the basis for the functioning of a true community.
Thanks to these technologies, scientists were able to move from looking at a handful of microbial strains in a petri dish to studying the complex relationships and interactions within communities. This was the start of microbiota research as we know it, which really got going in the late 1990s. So what were some of those first key experiments?
I would point to a paper by Joël Doré in 1999, where he and his colleagues in Paris amplified sequences from human fecal sample and sequence them, and then use those sequences to infer the nature and relationships of the organisms that were in this fecal sample. In the same year, we did work in my laboratory looking at some scrapings from human teeth. They were actually my own teeth. But from the same samples, we also asked the clinical microbiology lab here at Stanford to grow everything they could. And we compared what it was that we could see from culture and what it is that we could see from molecular technologies. The bottom line was that the sequencing approach revealed far more and was, you know, an order of magnitude more sensitive and informative.
Since those early experiments, we've continued to learn much about the microbiota, sometimes referred to as the microbiome, and its impact on human health. Several key strands of research have emerged.
Perhaps the first of these would be the recognition that the microbiome turns out to be one of the major defenses against invasion or infection by external pathogens. These are organisms like Salmonella that can normally infect a healthy person, but only when present in very large numbers. And that was work that began in the late 1950s and early 1960s, when it was found that antibiotics, when used to treat an animal, rendered the animal much more susceptible to these invasive pathogens. And today has been worked out in much more detail so that we understand mechanisms.
Researchers have also become much more aware of how the microbiota relates to nutrition and its links with obesity or malnutrition. They're also interested in the role that microbial populations play in chronic diseases like inflammatory bowel disease and how the microbiota helps shape our immune system.
That's work that was, again, recognized early on when germ-free animals were found to have deficient and defective immune systems, but became much better understood as germ-free animals could be reliably recolonized, and then their immune system studied in a great deal of detail.
Across all of these strands, and the many more that have emerged since, researchers have tried to link aspects of human health to the composition of the microbiota. But they quickly discovered that there's no one healthy microbial makeup. We're all unique. David thinks that understanding why this variation exists is key.
What are all the environmental factors? What are all the other host factors that cause differences in a microbiome? And can we understand those to the point of making predictions or designing interventions that could change our microbiome? And for this, I would point to the work of multinational population-based studies of thousands of individuals and their microbiomes to understand what is it that can account for differences between people. And what are these lifestyle factors that might be most important? And how do we rank them and think about those that we might be able to influence?
These kinds of population-scale studies, including the Human Microbiome Project, the Flemish Gut Flora Project, and the American Gut Project, have identified and genetically sequenced the microbial populations of thousands or tens of thousands of people. It's a long way from the early experiments that characterized the species on David's teeth. So given how far research has come, where does David think it's headed in the future?
If we accept that the microbiome is fundamentally important for health, then the future will be very much about how can we ensure that our microbiome continues to function properly, and when and if it becomes degraded or harmed or damaged by things that we do or things that happen to us, how can we restore it? And that is, I think, a big goal for work in the future.